Information-fueled, opinion-driven. This is the Dan Mandis Show, Super Talk 99.7.
206 on Super Talk 99.7. WTN, it is the Dan Mandis Show. I feel like I'm going to do what Phil does, topic triage. I've just got so many things I want to throw down in this last hour. I want to get to it. We know that the left constantly yammering on and on about Gitmo. Well, now we're finding out just how important Gitmo was in getting and shooting and killing and finding Osama bin Laden. Not necessarily in that order. A CIA-hired interrogator revealed how the agency tracked down Osama bin Laden. How? By putting together snippets of information let slip by prisoners at Guantanamo Bay. So when you hear the left constantly talk about how, oh, there's no real actionable intel that is being garnered from interviewing and quote-unquote torturing or whatever it is from those prisoners at Guantanamo Bay, well, that may not necessarily be the case, at least according to Dr. James Mitchell, who appeared on Fox and Friends this week to mark the eve of the sixth anniversary of Osama bin Laden's death. And he talked about how he worked with other interrogators to glean information from two of the terrorists' trusted confidants to find out where he was hiding in Pakistan. This is absolutely huge. It almost, and when I say almost, I mean just almost, but not quite. But it almost makes me want to forgive the fact that the prisoners in Guantanamo Bay actually have better health insurance and health and medical care than our veterans. Almost. Also, let's not forget that they get four halal meals a day. They get, of course, a couple of libraries at their disposal. They got television sets. I mean, it goes on and on with Guantanamo Bay. So there's a number of different ways, and you've heard me talk about Gitmo before. I mean, I've said in the past, well, you know what? I would be for closing Guantanamo Bay because it would mean that the terrorists in Guantanamo Bay would have less of a nice stay, if you will, in our own prisons. But life in Gitmo, not so bad for these folks. They've got their own lawyers. They've got their own doctors and nurses. It goes on and on. But for those folks on the left who say that, yeah, there's no actionable intel coming from Guantanamo Bay, well, not so much. And so they talk about these two guys. One was a courier and another one was a valued assistant, if you will, to Osama bin Laden. And what they say is that after interrogations from these folks there at Gitmo, they were able to find some actionable intel. I want to talk a little bit about Rachel Maddow. We spent some time in the first hour talking about Stephen Colbert and how Stephen Colbert, there's now a, I don't know if you would call it a huge movement, but there's a lot of people that are asking for Stephen Colbert to be fired. And I'm going to play you a little soundbite from Stephen Colbert that is causing all kinds of controversy. Then I'm going to play you a soundbite from Rachel Maddow. And she is talking about the news cycle. And there's a number of different ways that I can talk about not only Rachel Maddow, but also Stephen Colbert. Because when you look at the differences between the left and the right and how each party is reacting to these various controversies that we've had here in America, I think there's a lot of discussion in there. Because as much as the left is considering themselves to be tolerant, and a lot of the media considers the left to be tolerant, clearly they are not. And Stephen Colbert is clearly an example of that. I believe that the intolerant right needs to be more intolerant of Stephen Colbert based on his comments made about not only President Trump, but also intimating some sort of a sexual relationship between President Trump and Vladimir Putin. So you may know of the controversy. Stephen Colbert on Monday was talking about Donald Trump's first 100 days, and he was on a roll. I'm going to play a couple of different sound bites from Stephen Colbert, and you're going to hear that Stephen Colbert is absolutely unhinged.
Trump has repeatedly said that this 100 days thing is totally arbitrary, okay? Totally unimportant. And to prove how unimportant it is, he took out a TV ad, he cut a cake on Air Force One, and he held a rally in Pennsylvania. The theme of that rally, promises made, promises kept, which is better than their original slogan, promises made, never mind, never said it, fake news, watch Fox and Friends.
Yeah, okay. And so, when you just listen closely to all of those things that Stephen Colbert talked about. And as I said in the first hour, I could go for an hour just on that comment and have all kinds of commentary about the fake news, quote unquote, fake news and everything else. But I certainly do that pretty much on a daily basis. The tax returns question, of course, came up, and Stephen Colbert had this to say.
I'd like to rephrase the question. Mr. President, can you talk about your tax returns as a metaphor for your penis?
Mm. I have a very big tax return. You've seen the pictures. My tax return is probably higher than that from the floor. When you look at other people's tax return, even other wealthy people, their tax return is this thick. My tax return is this high.
We get it. You have a huge tax return. Mm. But you know what would be nice? A full release.
Yeah, and again, as I said earlier in the show, that just to me sounded a little creepy. But this is the soundbite that is causing all the controversy. And yes, I had to use a little tone to beep out what Stephen Colbert said, but I believe that it's pretty self-explanatory.
You talk like a sign language gorilla who got hit in the head. In fact, the only thing your mouth is good for is being Vladimir Putin's holster. Your presidential library.
So you can see the entire 10-minute unhinged monologue from Stephen Colbert on the Dan Mandis Show Facebook page, if you so choose. And people are saying that what Stephen Colbert said was homophobic. I don't really understand the homophobic part. I don't know if there's such a thing as straight privilege, but I don't really understand what it is that people are upset about related to that being a homophobic slur. But what I would say is that this is absolutely disrespectful of the office of the President of the United States. Now, we've been hearing all day from liberals who are saying, oh, listen to all the conservatives trying to take away Stephen Colbert's First Amendment rights when they're all up in arms from the whole situation with Ann Coulter at Berkeley University last week where they were screaming about her First Amendment rights. If you can't tell the difference between Ann Coulter and her First Amendment rights and what Stephen Colbert did last night, well, obviously you are blinded by your own ideology. Now, when I talked about this in the first segment, I got, for the most part, folks that agreed with me, but I got a few of the usual naysayers as well. But I would say this. I would say that whether it's Ann Coulter, whether it's the First Amendment rights of Milo Yiannopoulos, they were going to speak, and I'll repeat it again, they were going to speak to a private audience. People invited them to show up. And so when people invite them to show up, and I'm assuming they're going to get some sort of a fee, then they have a right to express their opinion right there in front of that group in a closed setting. It could be an open setting, whatever it is. But that is their right. If you can't tell the difference between that and Stephen Colbert going on television, on the public airwaves, saying what he said about the President of the United States, clearly you are blinded by your own ideology. Now, Stephen Colbert, he can say whatever he wants as long as he's not breaking any kind of an FCC regulation. And on the surface, I don't think that he broke any FCC regulations. But also don't forget, and we know this from Bill O'Reilly, because we've been talking about Bill O'Reilly the last several weeks and about how the left torpedoed and targeted all of those advertisers on Bill O'Reilly's program after all of those sexual abuse allegations came to light in the New York Times. So we know that the left knows how to target advertisers. So again, my question would be, so will the right do the same thing with Stephen Colbert? There is, of course, a hashtag campaign going out right now. It's hashtag Fire Colbert. But will there be more to the protests of Stephen Colbert and what he said about President Trump and this, supposed sexual relationship that he intimated with Vladimir Putin? Now, for the record, I obviously know that Stephen Colbert was cracking a joke. I know the difference between a serious allegation and a serious intimating of such a relationship and a joke. And that was obviously a joke. And Stephen Colbert plays at, 10:30 in the evening time on CBS. So we all know this. But when you look at how the media, and when you look at how things have changed, not only in the media, but also in some of these late night shows, it is absolutely stunning. And I know that Michael talked about it earlier, about how people like Johnny Carson and Jay Leno and some of these other folks, they never had to become this unhinged. You know, they might joke about President Ford, you know, falling down the staircase of Air Force One or some of these other things that they joked about in administrations past. But this is an all-out assault, verbal assault on the president of the United States. Now, you never saw this kind of anger and vitriol going up against, say, for example, President Obama. I mean, you didn't even see it with George W. Bush as well. So this is something that is clearly aimed and targeted at President Trump. And apparently Stephen Colbert has now decided that it's his job to just go absolutely unhinged on the president. Is it his right to do that if he's not breaking any kind of FCC regulations? Yes. The other sad thing about this is that there are, you know, I don't know, a couple hundred people in that studio audience, and they all absolutely thought it was drop dead funny. And when you think about the fact that not only did the people in the studio audience find it drop dead funny, but that I'm sure that there were millions of Americans who thought that was funny as well, I think that it shows, honestly, a dumbing down of where we are as a society and what our expectations are for the people that are, you know, trying to make jokes on late night television. Because this was far more than just a monologue full of humorous antidotes and jokes. No, this is, as I said, an all-out assault, verbal assault on the president of the United States. And so Rachel Maddow was on the Seth Meyers show, and they had a, I would say, pretty long conversation about President Trump. Now, I would throw Rachel Maddow right in there with Stephen Colbert. And we all know who Rachel Maddow is, and she was on, again, with Seth Meyers, and they started talking about President Trump and the news cycle, and I'm just going to play a couple of sound bites for you.
I don't know if you've noticed this in your show prep, too, but the rhythm of the news is different than it used to be.
Like, yeah.
When you have an administration, like, obviously, if you do mostly news about politics, then the sun at the center of the solar system for the news is the administration, and they make the most news. But usually they make it on purpose.
Right.
Like, they decide that they would like to do a thing that we would probably like to cover. In this administration, it's not like that. Like, they can't do a thing they want to do.
Right.
And so instead, the news is not made by them. It's made about them. And it just comes up whenever any investigative reporter hits send.
Yeah, but let's also not forget, I would say to Rachel Maddow, let's also not forget that there is, and I agree with President Trump on this, that there are a lot of these quote-unquote investigative reporters who are simply investigating things that simply are not things. You know, let's not forget, you know, the classic example is going to be the New York Times, where they just trumped out, so to speak, woman after woman after woman that had baseless allegations against President Trump, with absolutely no evidence whatsoever in accusations that were, what, over a decade old, right? Let's also not forget about the, in my opinion, the non-story of the tax return. So there's a number of different things that I could mention with Rachel Maddow talking about how, what was it, the news rhythm or whatever it is that she said changed. Also, let's not forget that the media just loves to focus on anything and everything negative about President Trump. It is an all-out assault. Again, it's not just Stephen Colbert that's going after President Trump and the Trump administration. It is all of the different media outlets.
But I have never, ever gone on the air so frequently at 9 p.m. Eastern and said, within the last few minutes.
Yeah.
Because that's not usually when politics happens. I mean, people are supposed to, like, have dinner and go home and stuff, you know?
But they're not politicians are not known for being super hard workers. They like getting home, too.
Right. I mean, because I'm on at 9 o'clock, I can't get most senators.
Yeah.
They're over 70. They've been in bed for 2.5 hours by the time I'm on the air. You know, but, like, but now it's like everybody's up like this.
Yeah.
He said what to Duterte?
Yeah, and you know what? I would mention that all you do have to do is pay attention to President Trump's Twitter feed. And I've made the joke before where I would actually agree with Rachel Maddow on this, believe it or not. And that is that if it's a slow news day, all you have to do is look at Trump's Twitter feed to find some sort of a story.
I talked to him during the primary, so he was an announced candidate. And the campaign had said, you are going to get an interview. I mean, we want you to talk to him. He wants to have a preliminary conversation with you. It's very off the record. You can never say that the call happened. You cannot record it. You cannot talk about this call, but this call has to happen. And then we're going to give you the interview if the call goes well. And I was like, this is weird.
Okay.
But, okay, you know, you have to jump through hoops sometimes to get interviews. And then I had this conversation with him. It became clear that kind of the reason he maybe wanted to do an interview with me is because I'd sort of said that he had good chances against his Republican primary opponents. We kind of dished dirt on all the things he thought was wrong with all his Republican primary opponents. Mm-hmm. And I was like, okay, we'll just...
Yeah, but now we know what happened with that whole conversation with Rachel Maddow. The interview never happened. And it was also one of those situations with Rachel Maddow. Not only did the interview never happen, and I think that the reason why the interview never happened is because President Trump slowly started to realize as the campaign went on, leading up to November 8th, and certainly he knows it now, is that there are good journalists and there are bad journalists, and there are, quite frankly, fake journalists as well. And so I think that the reason why President Trump decided at that point not to deal with Rachel Maddow and MSNBC is because he became more cognizant, more aware of these various news organizations that would take the words that he would say and either misrepresent what he said, or they would draw way too much into whatever commentary or whatever speech he was making, and taking some of these great leaps as to what it was that President Trump either meant or had to say, or how his comments would relate to some sort of policy initiatives as President of the United States. And I think that Trump, over time, I think he started realizing that people like Rachel Maddow, people and entities like the New York Times and the Washington Post and some of these other outlets, the more that they misrepresented what President Trump said, the more that the American people realized what was going on in this battle between the mainstream media and President Trump. And the more that they realized that that battle was going on, the more the mainstream media absolutely buried themselves and, in a way, helped President Trump. More on that coming up here on Super Talk 99.7 WTN. Another story that I have got to share with you before the hour is up, and Phil Valentine is up next at 3:06, is a couple of students have gone way out of their way to get some compromising photos of their teacher. Now, this is an important story, not only for teachers, but for parents as well. That story coming up here on Super Talk 99.7 WTN. 2:34, Super Talk 99.7 WTN, 615-737-9986, 615-737-WWTN. I was not surprised by this story. There was a time many years ago, I went to a ball game at Fenway Park in Boston. One of my all-time favorite experiences that was marred, though, by one episode. Or maybe a lot of episodes woven into one narrative out of Fenway Park in Boston. I was sitting, and this was many years ago, in the outfield seats at Fenway Park. And Maglio Ordonez, who was playing for, I think it was the Detroit Tigers, was playing center field. And I've got to tell you, I have never been so disgusted in my life with what I heard coming from the fans at Fenway Park in Boston. As I'm sitting there trying to enjoy the game, you hear all of these drunken, obnoxious Bostoners, if that's what you want to call them, and they're spewing all kinds of nasty, racist, hate-filled vile at Maglio Ordonez, who is, as you can imagine by the name, he is Hispanic. And the overriding theme from a lot of these insults being hurled at Maglio Ordonez was, "Hey, Mags, why don't you come mow my lawn?" I mean, it's just stupid stuff like that. And I got a little frustrated. And I even said to a guy who was sitting behind me, I was like, "Dude, why don't you chill? I'm trying to watch the game." And, you know, it didn't stop there because, you know, I was telling them to stop. And they just continued on. Security did absolutely nothing, by the way. And I'm not sure if security, you know, they should escort them from the park if you're hurling racial insults at some of these players. But I was just disgusted. And so it wasn't real surprising, based on the insults that I heard hurled at Maglio Ordonez about how he should go mow a Boston Red Sox fan's lawn, that this headline coming out of Fenway Park in Boston: as black baseball players are now revealing the racial abuse that is being hurled at them. Now, I do understand that when you are a professional anything, whether it be a baseball player, basketball player, whatever, you are going to have to tolerate a certain amount of abuse. You know, be it your free throw socks or whatever. I have no idea. But you shouldn't have to tolerate the N-word, which is what center fielder for the Baltimore Orioles, Adam Jones, says he has been receiving when he goes to Fenway Park. And now there are black players all throughout the major leagues that are coming out and saying, oh, we know that when we go to Fenway Park, we are indeed going to be have to deal with the N-word being hurled at them, whether they are out on the field or whether they're in the batter's box and the, what do you call it, the batting circle, all these kinds of things. Pretty much any time you're near the fans, the black player is going to hear this. And so Adam Jones finally came out after suffering this abuse for so long. He finally said, you know, a handful of times I have been called the N-word and somebody threw a bag of peanuts at him earlier this week. He says the incidents were not the first time he has been the target of racial insults, but they were the worst that he had faced in his 12-year career. And so that led other black players, again, to now come forward, including the New York Yankees pitcher CeCe Sabathia, backing up Jones's claims and saying that all of the African-American players, they know that they will be abused when playing at Fenway Park. He says, yeah, to USA Today, I was called the N-word a handful of times. Pretty awesome. Thanks a lot, Boston fans. Now, Red Sox officials confirmed that a fan did indeed throw a bag of peanuts at Jones and was ejected from the stadium and say they are reviewing Monday's incident. And apparently, Jones says that there were like 59 or 60 ejections from the ballpark after apparently the N-word was quite abundant. He says it's unfortunate that people need to report those types of epithets to denigrate another human being. But I can tell you my experience at Fenway Park, and no offense to you folks from Boston, but I can tell you from my own personal experience that the fans at Fenway Park, and it's been a couple of different occasions that I've been there because I love Fenway Park and I love the city of Boston. But I hear this stuff all the time. And then if you're somebody who turns around and said, dude, shut the H up. Why do you have to be such a pig? Then you, being me, or any other self-respecting person, you run the risk of getting into a fight and being escorted from the ballpark yourself or getting the crap beaten out of you by some drunken Boston Red Sox fan. Yeah, CeCe Sabathia said he has been experiencing the same thing. Back in January, Red Sox pitcher David Price telling the Boston Globe that he heard racial slurs directed at him from Red Sox fans while he was warming up at the bullpen last season, which was his first with the team after signing a contract as a free agent in 2015. So it is rather sad because I do believe that the city of Boston is a great city. But after what I experienced at Fenway Park, as I said, this does not surprise me. I do like some of what Adam Jones had to say. He says, you know, there's nothing you can say to me that I haven't heard before. He says, your ignorance, in the message to the fans hurling the N-word, your ignorance is not going to affect what I'm trying to do. He says, but I feel sad that it's still out there. Now, this is where, if I wanted to make a talk radio topic out of this, I'd take calls on this. Jones says that he believes that the fans should face harsher punishments than simply being thrown out of the game. He says it's pathetic. It's called a coward. What they need to do is that instead of kicking fans out of the stadium, they need to fine them $10,000, $20,000, $30,000, something that really hurts somebody. He says that the incident is unfortunate, adding that he is going to move forward. He says, the best thing about myself is that I continue to move on. I still play the game hard. Let people be who they are. Let them show their true colors. The Red Sox are apologizing for the episodes, and there were multiple episodes, a day after Jones made his claims. The Red Sox, in their statement, say they want to publicly apologize to Adam Jones and the entire Orioles organization for what occurred at Fenway Park on Monday night, saying no player should have an object thrown at him on the playing field nor be subjected to any kind of racism at Fenway Park. The Red Sox have zero, I'm going to call BS on this. The Red Sox have zero tolerance for such inexcusable behavior. Well, they do. I mean, they do. This episode with Maglio Ordóñez happened about 10, 15 years ago for me. Now, one of the issues at Fenway Park, because CeCe Sabathia was interviewed on this, and he says that this does not happen in other ballparks. One of the reasons why it doesn't happen in other ballparks is because there are more security guards. And at Fenway Park, there are not as many security guards. And in my many times that I've gone to Fenway Park, I can tell you that there's not an abundance of security guards. And the security guards that are there, quite frankly, not exactly friendly. Had a couple of different episodes with the... Anyway, whatever. So, I don't know. You know, I don't know about fining somebody $30,000 because as ugly and as vile as it is, I don't know if you can fine somebody $30,000 for hurling the N-bomb. But what I could say is that they can ban those people from the ballpark. Now, I don't know how you would really do that, because if somebody came in and they paid cash for a ticket, per se, then how do you really tell who they are? Are you going to start asking for identification from each and every fan that wants to go to a Red Sox game? So I don't know how they would end up banning somebody from the ballpark. I don't think you can fine people $30,000 for doing what they did. However, it is really sad that we have people. And listen, if you think this is just a Boston thing, no, this is something that happens all across America. We know that there are ugly, vile, disgusting people all across America. And it's not only in the baseball stadiums across America, but it's everywhere. And it's important to note, and this is why I get really frustrated, because all across America, especially in college campuses, you know, you have all of these folks that are saying that, you know, there is all of these different, you know, racist episodes that have been happening. But oftentimes they then share these episodes that not really racist in nature. Right? How many times have we talked about that? How many times have we talked about some of these safe spaces on college campuses where they say, oh, you know, white folks are racist and they need their safe space from, you know, the other student body, you know, say, for example, the white folks. And so they all kind of sequester themselves in their safe spaces when the white people have been nothing but supportive. We saw that at the University of Missouri a couple of years back. Remember that? And so one of the things that I've always said is all of these constant, and I mean constant, accusations of racism from some segments of our society, they tend to dilute real episodes of racism in this country like we saw at Fenway Park. 244 on WTN. This is, I think, one of my favorite stories of the day, only because it's rather unique. Listen to this. Two students have been busted for distributing a nude photo of a teacher. Now, we have seen this before, and this happened in North Carolina. Do you remember this story in Atlanta, Georgia, where a couple of students grabbed the cell phone of a teacher, found some compromising photos of the teacher on the phone, and they emailed that picture to other students? The teacher had walked out of the room, and so the students went up, grabbed the phone, found the compromising photo, and then emailed it back, and then put the phone back on the desk, and those students got busted. Well, listen to how these students got a hold of these nude photos of a teacher. Now, this is, on the one hand, kind of brilliant. On the other hand, it's really sadistic and really sneaky, and the teacher should have known better. At least you would think that a teacher would know better. Authorities say two North Carolina high school students used trickery to get a nude photo of a teacher from a social media dating site and then were arrested after showing the picture to other students. Local media outlets are reporting the two 16-year-old students are charged with misdemeanor disclosure of private images. Each was given a $5,000 bond, and they have a June 15th court date, not known if they have attorneys. And so what they're saying is that these students misrepresented themselves on a social media site. And so if I'm going to read between the lines here, it seems like what they did was they started engaging said teacher on social media. It's almost like catfishing. They engage the teacher on social media some way, shape, or form. And I don't know if the teacher is a male or a female, but they're engaging the teacher and, I'm assuming, representing themselves as maybe perhaps a love interest or a sex interest, right? And so at one point, they got the teacher to say, you know, hey, you know, whatever they say on these social media sites, and then sent the photo. The teacher sent the photo to the two students, thinking it was a love slash sex interest. And so the students basically conned the teacher into sending them a compromising photo. Now, two things. One, yes, the teacher should have been absolutely forthright. And teachers need to know this. I mean, don't teachers know that students are out to get them? I mean, I hate to say it. It's what, 2:47? So there's a lot of teachers that might be driving home right about now. I know there's moms that are in their car and they're driving their kids home. So I'm sorry for the content. But I think that the teachers need to be cognizant that students are as sneaky and nefarious as ever in trying to get their teachers, from, you know, tricking a teacher into sending them some sort of a compromising photo. And let's face it, that could have been used for blackmail purposes. It could have been used for anything. We also know that students have filmed teachers in compromising positions related to, you know, the teachers trying to discipline students in the classroom. And sometimes that discipline gets a little crazy. And then the teacher ends up getting, you know, really angry with the students. And then some sort of an altercation gets involved. So I would love to say that this is, you know, the fault of the students, but I blame the teacher for this. I also blame the students as well, but I blame the teacher for this. Because teachers need to know that the students have the ability to try and trick them into doing any number of different things. So we'll see what happens to these teachers, this student. But, you know, I hate to say it, but the teacher should have known better. Final story of the day for me, and this is the story that I promoted. We've talked about stolen valor quite a bit. Here is a horrific story of stolen valor. You can see the entire story on the Dan Mandy Show Facebook page. Now, in case you don't know what stolen valor is when a person represents or misrepresents themselves as a veteran in order to gain something, whatever it might be. A former soldier has now been sentenced to 21 months in federal prison for stealing the real-life war story of a dead comrade to con his way into money and a free home. Now, we all know those groups, and I love these groups, that will provide veterans that are down on their luck with a free home and money. We know all about those organizations. They're great organizations. But this particular Marine, who was an actual Marine, but he misrepresented his story. The guy's name is Brandon Blackstone. He's 35 years old, and he's from Arlington, Texas. And he has now been convicted under the 2013 Stolen Valor Act. What did he do? He stole the tragic story of his 1st Battalion, 7th Marine Regiment comrade-in-arms, Casey Owens. Now, Owens himself killed himself after losing his legs in Iraq in 2004, what they say, a tragic end that did not stop Blackstone from stealing his story and using it to line his pockets. And so this guy basically stole the whole tragic story of Casey Owens, and he continuously gave interviews and all of these other things to draw attention to himself. He gave out like 7 different interviews talking about this story that never happened to him, but did happen to Casey Owens. He basically lied. And not only did he lie, not only was he fraudulent, but he was also very brazen about it. And so this group comes along, the Military Warrior Support Foundation, and long story short, he ends up getting a house, he ends up getting a whole bunch of money and everything else, and now they figured it out. Now, what's interesting is, you know, this guy, Casey Owens, he lost both of his legs in a horrific, you know, roadside bomb accident. And this guy, Brandon Blackstone, I believe has both of his legs. So how did Brandon Blackstone convince people that he had lost both of his legs when he had both of his legs? That's the part of the story that I haven't quite figured out yet. It's 2:51 on Super Talk 99.7 WTN, Dan Mandy's show.
I'm Pamela Furr charges in the death of a Charlotte Pike Exxon clerk, and the president is meeting today with GOP lawmakers to get enough votes to pass the health care plan to replace Obamacare. These stories and more are coming up at 3 on WT.
Is that a dramatic pause?
I was waiting for the music.
All right, very good.
Left me hanging with no music. I don't like it.
You know, I hate when they do that.
I know.
Hey, you know what? I know I spent some time bashing women earlier in the program. First of all, I didn't mean all women, but just for fair and balance, if you go to the Dan Mandy Show Facebook page, you will see the story of a man who has spent more than $25,000 on plastic surgery to become an elf. Yep. You can see that story and a whole lot more on the Dan Mandy Show Facebook page.
So you're saying stupid is not just women.
That's exactly what I'm saying. Phil Valentine is up next. You can also find me on Facebook and Twitter at Dan Mandy Show. Send me an email, dan at 99.7wtn.com. We'll see you tomorrow.